Thank you, Betsy. So you never know what's going to happen in program. When I got here, I didn't know I was going to lead the meeting, and then somebody told me Rich was speaking. I'm like, who's Rich? I don't know who Rich is. So I see him here, and of course I know who Rich is. I see him frequently at the Sunday meeting on York and Fig. Always enjoy his shares and his leadership. Does a lot of service work. So let me introduce Rich.
My name is Rich, and I am a grateful recovering victim. I came to this room for the first time in earnest a little over 3 years ago, so miserable, so not wanting to be here. And I don't have the typical Al-Anon story. I did not come because of an alcoholic or addict that was actively using in my life, nor did I grow up in a house of alcoholism. And because of those two things, it kept me from coming to Al-Anon for way too long. But I want to tell you what it was like, and if you identify with what I share, regardless of what your current situation is, I have a hunch that you found a place that I call home. So I grew up in New York, oldest of three kids, two parents who are still together, loving house, very supportive family, two great sisters. Everything I ever needed for the most part was given to me within reason, and I was miserable 24/7. I was miserable, I was scared, I was afraid of everything. Today my wife and I have a little dog named Pete, the Chihuahua. I think I can break his anonymity. And like, if he sees a fly in the house, his whole body shakes uncontrollably. And I so get, like I say to him like, dude, I get it. I totally get it. Like, I know that feeling. And I don't know why. Like, I don't know why. But what I did at the time, I didn't know why. And this was up to 3 years ago when I walked in here. What I realized in recovery is that for reasons I can't tell you why, I thought the world worked a certain way. I created this, or I believed that this is what I believe to be true, as much as I believe that I am here with you today standing on my own two legs. That in the world there is a club. The club is filled of the beautiful people, the rich people, the thin people, the people who know how to catch a ball, the people who know how to play an instrument, the people who know how to talk to people that they are romantically interested in. And this is the club that I will never be in. I will never be in this club. I can try as hard as I can, but I will be a loser for the rest of my life because of fate, because of, I don't know if I thought it was genetics or just light luck or whatever it was, but I believed that to my core. And I didn't even know for the first 20 something years of my life that I thought that, because I just thought it was a constant, the way that we think about the sun's gonna come up in the morning. I didn't know it until mid 90s, there was a song, a rock song that had come out. And I'm not like a big music guy, but the song was basically about a guy who's at a party, and the chorus was, and I'm sure I'll screw it up, but he basically says, but I'm a creep, I'm a loser, I don't belong here, what am I doing here? And that song rattled me to my core, because I had never identified with anything before or since until coming to recovery 12-step programs. I was like, this is who I am a loser. And what I thought I could do is that through self-will, I could work my way up the ladder of life. If I was a 2, I think I can get up to a 5. And if I work really hard, I can fool you into thinking that maybe I'm not such a fundamental loser. So I needed to convince you to like me. And I had two major, filled with fear. I was afraid of everything. But beyond, we were just talking about this at a meeting a few weeks ago, beyond fear of death, fear of cancer, fear of being homeless, I had two main fears that have ruled my life. The first is fear of disapproval from you. It rocks me to my core. And the second is fear that I'm going to be taken advantage of, which I'll talk about a little bit later. And the first one was so important because the way that I felt better about myself is thinking that you incorrectly think great things about me. And if you actually catch on and disapprove of me, you are validating the most core, primal, shameful thing about myself, which is that I think I'm a loser. Core. And what's the fix for trying to avoid people not approving of me? people-pleasing. I would do whatever I had to do in my life to get you to like me, because that made me feel better. I've enjoyed alcohol, I've enjoyed other substances, but there's nothing like the hit of you approving of me. Like a warm blanket. It's the greatest feeling in the world. And like those other substances that there are other 12-step programs for, it is fleeting. It does not last. It is not a solution. It is not a way of living. It is an instant gratification that does take me out of myself for the amount of time that you can tell me how great I am. And I'm not saying not to do that later. I'm just saying it is not the only thing that I need in my life. The problem is I also have this horrible fear of being taken advantage of. So now I will do things in my life from age one to the day I came in to try to get mine and keep you from getting more than me. But because I'm a people pleaser, I don't do it directly. I hear the stories of the alcoholics and I'm so in awe of the cojones, because I would do it around and about and this and that and try, and then people, I'd be stepping on toes of others and they would get upset at me. And I had, because I'm so fear-based, I have an amazing system of survival, which is this. Once I know the thing I should do to make something right or to take care of myself in a really clear way, but I'm too afraid to do it, my mind is brilliant. Instead of doing it anyway, it will instead create a resentment. I shouldn't have to do that. F you for me having to do the right thing. And it was the greatest get out of jail free card ever. I could simply resent you instead of doing things that would make my life better, and I wouldn't have to face the fears of whatever the thing that was. And so I lived this life. Now, what happens? When I live a life like that, people love me for short periods of time, and then eventually get very disenchanted with me, because I don't actually want to do the things that I'm promising I'm going to do for you so that you will like me. So now I'm trying to get out of things but I don't want to directly confront you and tell you, hey, I'm sorry I made you that commitment. I'm actually not going to do that. I'm going to try to, in some sitcom way, get out of it. And it's crazy making. So, and none of this is making me feel any better. I am still at my core this person who feels like a loser. And so everyone that I have in my life coming towards program are people that I thought I didn't deserve, and any day now they're gonna figure that out, or they're also broken in some other way, and that's like, we can sort of deserve each other in some weird way. And part of this also, and it's not this story, but also for me, the instant gratification also came in food. So I found another 12-step program to help, because I was using food as instant gratification. So coming to Al-Anon, the 12 steps and the process of recovery was not necessarily new to me. But again, I did not have an active alcoholic in my life, nor were either my parents alcoholics. So even though I heard people in another 12-step program talk about Al-Anon things, and I'd be like, wow, I really identify with that. Too bad I don't belong. Too bad this doesn't apply to me. Too bad I can't come. No one told me I can't come. I just decided, because I heard generically who's your qualifier and you have to have this. So again, instead of asking somebody, can I go, I instead decided I can't go. But there was someone in my life who I thought should come. And it would make my life a lot better if that person started coming. And I tried everything, and every once in a while I would take that person to a meeting, and I would hear and I would be like, oh my God, this is so exactly perfect for you. This is what you, and that person, it didn't take. And a fellow in another fellowship, I was also in this fellowship in Al-Anon, and I would repeatedly ask him, how can I get this other person to come to Al-Anon so that it will stick? And eventually he said to me, if you ask me again, you have to go to Al-Anon. Because I was trying to control this person in my life, because I had had such spiritual and emotional and physical recovery from the 12 steps, I wanted it for this other person who was in pain. And ultimately, I got to a point in my life where this relationship was bringing me so much pain. I believe that the relationship and the actions of this other person were bringing me so much pain that I was devoid of happiness, I was devoid of fun, I was devoid of being able to enjoy anything. Not in a way where I was, you know, going out and doing crazy things, but like I would live a life of getting to where I needed to be and just hiding in my car. Just give me 10 minutes. I'll just stare out the window and just do nothing. I just don't want to go in wherever. I just don't want to face the next thing. And that thinking I found is very contagious, that when I apply it to one thing, I will start to apply it to everything. And I will start to disengage and withdraw. And basically, you know, that old, you're a loser. It is better to quit than to be seen failing. So just quit. Just give up. And ultimately, I got to a point in my life where I felt like with this major relationship, I was out of options. And I thought, I should say this, the step one of we're powerless over alcohol, we're powerless over other people. I had now been so beaten down. I had tried everything. Because I had been using another 12-step program to help me with these relationships. And it wasn't just one. There was one major one, but it really, there were a number of relationships in my life that the more I tried, the worse they seemed to be getting. And I couldn't figure out, I knew it was me, but I couldn't figure out, well, what are the tools that I need to do it better? And I got to a point where, unless my train is not there. I know what I was going to say about the first step. I knew that what I thought that I needed, the only reason I came to this program, is I thought, I think with the tools and the steps of Al-Anon, I can learn to draw boundaries where I currently don't have boundaries. And at the time, my understanding of a boundary is, I need to draw certain lines in the sand and say with firmness and honesty, if you cross this line, I am going to do X, and then I need to be ready to do X. Because that's how I thought boundaries worked. And I believe that Al-Anon would give me that. So I came to this program, I came to this meet. I had come to a couple of meetings here and there. I came to this meeting back, just men, and I was very fearful of coming because I thought, again, I don't belong, I don't have whatever. But what was interesting for me as I heard stories of people's spouses and parents and loved ones and brothers and sisters doing things orders of magnitude bigger than what was going on in my life, and I completely related. I related on such a fundamental level, and I didn't feel like I was not a part of. I didn't feel like, oh, I don't belong here. I don't have somebody crashing their car and leaving it and disappearing for 3 days, so I don't belong here. Because I heard not the events, I heard the way that you talked about those events. And I identified with the way that you discussed it, and the pain, and the feeling at wit's end. And I figured that I do belong here, although I will say, this meeting particularly, there's a real joy and a laughter and a camaraderie of the men, and it was excruciatingly off-putting because this, I'm just going to call it out, it's inside jokes. You guys have chants and calls and callbacks and stuff, and again, it says to me, you're a creep, you're a loser, I don't belong here, what am I doing here? I don't need this. It's not an inclusive feel. It's a, hey, if you stick around, you'll be one of us one day. And I didn't want that. But I did come to the next meeting, which was exactly 3 years ago this month, the first meeting of March, because my friend invited me to come. And this old, 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 old man Carl shared. And I thought he was going to die during the 45 minutes. But he didn't. And what he said changed everything. And I don't know what he said, but I heard him, I heard my story in his story, even though his circumstances were fundamentally different. We couldn't have had more different lives, but I heard him, and I heard him walk through his recovery in a way that I said, oh, I can do that too. I think I can get that. And that was the beginning for me. And I count that as, that to me, that's my anniversary. I know I could have celebrated with cake, but celebrating with cake's what got me into the food program. So I thought I'll just focus on this for now. So, and I heard that in this program, You can just come and be, and people get relief from this disease from just being in the rooms, which is different than what I had heard in other 12-step programs. And I will say to this day, now 3+ years in, I see that it happens. And I think, and this is just me, this is not literature or other people, I do think that there is this very long and winding and gentle road up to the peak of recovery that we can walk by coming to meetings and going to fellowship and stuff, and that it works. There's also a ladder that goes straight to recovery, and it's got 12 steps. I chose the ladder because I didn't have time for the long and winding road. That's not to take away from anyone who chooses another way. I heard a guy who was in the following meeting who shared for 3 minutes. He had exactly, his spirit was the spirit that I hoped I would get from recovery. I found out that he has like 722 sponsees. So I asked somebody, how can I get a, do you know who he sponsors that I can ask? And someone said, ask him. And I asked him and he said, I'd be happy to sponsor you. And I was just like, oh man, that's a lot of people, but I'll do it. And I'll start with him. And boy, it was so perfect because he, you know what, I heard what I needed from him and I hear it every day and I'm so grateful for him. We got right onto the steps. The first step was in this program, I had worked it in other programs, it was transformative for me. Because I had these relationships in my life, a couple of key relationships that their behaviors were driving me crazy. I'm right, they're crazy, I have to compromise, this sucks. But in working the first step, one of the things that became apparent is that the things that were upsetting me in these current relationships had been true in every relationship I had ever had up to that point. All my romantic relationships, all my business relationships, all my close friend relationships, it was all the same. So how can I blame the people current me in my life for being 100% of the problem if the problems predate them? And as a comedian I had once heard said, I realized the calls are coming from inside the house. And I really understood that step one. And here was the difference for me working step one here. The idea that you guys tell me I'm powerless over other people, my life has become unmanageable. For some reason, it finally occurred to me, that's not a prison sentence, that's the freedom. Because if I can let go of what hasn't worked for 44 years, and I can try to change something that I can change, which is me, and that's gonna give me the happiness, joyousness, and freeness that you guys have, I'm willing to try that. I'm willing to try that. And it was amazing to see that happen. And we started working step two, and I had come to 12-step an atheist. I didn't want to hear any of this stuff, and I've always struggled with it. And I've done every conception of God exercise that has ever been invented, and it never worked for me. But I did know I wasn't, what I needed to do, just me, Rich, is I didn't need to find God. I didn't need to discover, I needed to shift my focus from one higher power to another. Because I thought, well, I don't believe in a higher power, which is not true. My wife was my higher power. My dad was my higher power. My boss was my higher power. The barista who looks at me weird when I order a tea instead of a coffee is my higher power. Like, everyone was a higher power except an actual higher power. And that was very, very helpful for me. But anytime people have said, like, why don't you imagine this? Why don't you imagine that? It distances me. And my sponsor said to me, you know, I don't try to explain it. I don't try to picture it. I don't have a conception of it. All I can tell you is that for some reason that makes no logical sense, I know I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And that hit me the same way that that rock song hit me in 1993. I was like, you know what? I can't explain it. I can't logically map out why I agree with this, but I something deep in me, underneath all of this nonsense we've been talking about for the first 15 minutes, believes that I'm going to be okay. And so starting to see working that and sort of, okay, I can believe that. Then the third step was, well, let's do it. Let's stop trying to control other people and let's turn our lives over to something else. And that was transformative. One of the big things that I saw is what was actually driving me crazy about other people's actions were not their actions. It was the story I was telling myself about their actions. Like, I now understand, if my wife, like, you know, is annoyed at me at night, I'm devastated. If your wife smashes your laptop with a baseball bat, I'm fine. Like, it's not the action, it's what the action I thought was doing to me. It's the story. If she doesn't, if I admit that I'm wrong in this fight, then she'll always be able to do this. If I tell my boss, okay, I will do the thing that I don't want to do, then he will be able to get me to do it over. Like, these are the stories I was telling myself. And just in the first, not even year, I was starting to let go of the stories. And I always thought what would happen in recovery, based on what I heard you guys saying, is, well, if I stop trying to fix other people, I will get relief from that effort that is fruitless. And that's true. But what also happened is I realized the tools that I was using imperfectly to try to make my life better were the problem. The tools that I was using to get you to like me, to get you to love me, or to be honest, sometimes just to get you to shut the F up, were the problem. And I saw that when I abstained from the tools of trying to control other people changed the way that they dealt with me. And again, addict behavior is addict behavior. We're not going to change that. But I started to see in working this how much of this was my part. And I really saw that in the fourth step and just seeing all again and again and again. I didn't cause it, but I made it worse. I did cause it. I was proactively worried about something else happening. I tried to this, and I could see all of these ways that I was actually actively making my life worse, thinking I was trying to make it better. And the relief from that, I can't tell you what a relief that is. And then, continuing, I'm on step six now, and so, the fourth and fifth step were clearly, and I had done them before, but they were clearly transformative. The idea, when I half-jokingly say I made other people my higher power, I thought I knew what my defects were, but it was amazing how many times my resentment was, why didn't you save me? Why didn't you hire me for an amazing job? Why didn't you whatever? Why wasn't someone just saving me? It's that core victim belief of I'm a loser, so the only way it's going to get better is if you save me. And I had never seen that before. And it's just a story. It's a story I tell. Didn't get it from my folks. Didn't get it from my school. I don't know where it came from. But letting go of that was very, very transformative for me. And working the tools and working the steps, really, so much of it was about the meetings and about the fellowship. Because I have found, I think people learn differently. I learn from talking, and hearing myself pitch at meetings is where I've had my greatest insights about myself. And I can't do that alone. And not to, like, I could hire a bunch of extras to sit in a room with me and I could just sort of like, hey, let's pretend we're at a meeting. The miracle of this program is that I came to the rooms and you all shared things that I would never share in the real world. And you made it okay for me to share what was going on in my life. And I can never thank you guys enough for that. The service that is done for me of just sharing the shit is transformative, because I realize I'm not alone, I'm not unique. If I'm broken, you're broken too, so at least we're in this together. But more importantly, I can now share about it, about what's going on in my life, and from that, I start to plant the seeds of what recovery is. That is huge for me. What else do I want to say before I get to what it's like now? And I struggle with reaching out to my fellows. It is so hard. It is the hardest thing in the world. Not because I don't love you, not because I don't want, let me say, my dad and I are super close, been close our whole lives. We never say I love you, never do. He doesn't, so I don't, we never do. I don't question whether he does. I know for a fact he doesn't question whether I do. But when guys in this room tell me that they love me, I remember saying to a close friend, like, you know, ditto. That was my big, like, gotcha, back at you, brother. And the idea of calling someone I don't know and I might be bothering them, and are they gonna tell me, and it is so hard for me, but it is the journey that I'm on. And I can say, you know, now my sponsor says I love you every time he hangs up the phone. He says it to everybody, so I know I'm not special, but I'm trying to say it. But in a way, we're all special. Like, he's just at a point where he loves the people in his life and is very comfortable saying it. And someone who drives me crazy said it to me right before I share, and I was just like, yeah, I can feel that today. Like, and I feel it back and I can say it. And of course I have to say it in a jokey way as cover just in case, but I can say it. The trouble, the obstacle that I still have to recovery is that this is what my, in the disease, this is what the disease sounds like to me today. I am willing to go to any lengths to recover as long as I am not inconvenienced in any way possible. Other than that, I'm in. And this is a program of inconvenience. And I will say, you know, and I need to continue to push myself to be inconvenienced. Inconvenienced to talk to the person that I don't know what to say, or go to the meeting. Service, you know, to hear someone introduce me as a person who I see do a lot of service. I was like, oh, who's leading tonight? Like, what? But I do, because for me, especially with meetings, my experience is the way that I break through the them versus me is taking a service commitment. It works every time, and yet I still have to push myself to do it every time, because why would I want to commit to coming every week to a bunch of people that I don't like? But the truth is, of course I like you. I love you. I just have these walls up. I have these fears that you are going to disapprove of me, that I'm not in your club, that you are going to take advantage of me. But when I do service, and I volunteer to be secretary at a meeting, and it was the best 6 months of my life. It was amazing. And me raising my hand was like, I don't know, but luckily no one else wanted the goddamn job. So I got it. And it's been amazing. And so what it's like today is 3+ years later, same wife, same company, same family, pretty much the same friends except for a couple of you guys in here. The only thing that's different is absolutely everything. Because I no longer have a pit of anxiety in my stomach from the moment that I wake up to the moment I go to sleep. I didn't know that would, to me, that thinking that would be removed would be like saying, we're gonna cut one of your feet off. Like, I didn't think it was possible without harm. I don't have this pit of anxiety in my stomach today. That is an unbelievable shift. And, you know, we say we can't change, you know, we can't change other people's behaviors, but as I alluded to earlier, in some ways I have been able to, because there were people that, like, there were crazy people in my life, and I understand they were crazy because I was driving them crazy. And I have stopped doing the crazy making things imperfectly, not always, and my relationships with them are fundamentally better, even though almost to a person they're still struggling with the exact same demons, if not worse, than they had when I came in. They are not better, as I would, you know, they are not, they have yet found the relief from the demons in their life. But my relationship with them is far, far better. By orders of magnitude, I can't tell you. I now, often I get home or I get to work and I bound out of my car because I'm excited to get to the place I wanted to go, instead of trying to steal 10 or 15 minutes to brace myself for whatever might come. To the same people. That is a miracle that I did not think was possible. And it's this idea that, you know, that I got from my sponsor that is now my higher power. My higher power is this knowing that I'm okay. That I'm okay. And what I learned from that is I will be okay. If I'm always okay, I'm always gonna be okay. But I have to change my conception of okay. Because my brain tells me, if I get fired, I won't be okay. If my wife leaves me, I won't be okay. If we're homeless, we won't be okay. If my parents pass away, I won't be okay. I have to let go of my conception of okay to the larger okay. That I've seen all the stuff that you guys have walked through, and you're all okay, and I will be okay. I still do the footwork that is given to me in this program to make my life the best it can be. It's not a get out of jail free card for footwork. My life continues to improve because of the footwork I'm doing, but when that fear comes, I'm okay. And the first thing that's changed in my life is that almost always when there is fear, either I call somebody or I'm already on the phone or I'm returning someone else's call and I can discuss it. I'm not even asking for help. I'm not asking for advice. I can always discuss it, which I never did. I never discussed the things that were scared for me. And here's what I have found about my life 100% of the time. I can't speak to everyone else. I only know my life. No fear in specificity was ever as bad as it was in vagueness. Once I discussed it and I contained it and I understood it, no matter how bad it was, it got better than this vague concept of just something bad is gonna happen. And that, sometimes it was completely relieved, or sometimes it just became a manageable thing that we could discuss what the footwork is. And I could do the footwork to walk through it. Instead of developing a resentment imperfectly, I now, for the most part, ask my sponsor, my fellows, sometimes my wife, sometimes my boss, sometimes my dad, for advice on how to walk through it. And I have always been okay. The thing that is crazy for me to accept is that if I am always okay and I'm always going to be okay, it means I always was okay. I was always okay. There's no club. I'm not a loser or a winner. It's all stories that I was telling myself for reasons that I don't have to know. I will say, by the way, that because of some research I've done, I do actually think that there's a chance that even though I did not grow up in a house of alcoholism, possibly other people in my house had grown up in a world of alcoholism, which made sense because in my other program, other people would say, hey, I'm an ACA too. And I'm like, I'm not now, and I'm, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Hey, you just seemed like you were an adult child of an alcoholic. So I identify that maybe some of this stuff does actually come from other people who also struggled with alcoholism when they were growing up. But I don't need to know exactly. I don't know. Someone said, well, how come you never asked? Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Whatever got me here, and this relief is this relief. It's not gonna change if I find out that grandma, someone did. It doesn't matter to me, because I was always okay. They were never the problem. It was, you know, and I know that for some people, growing up, there were people that were problems. I don't wanna take away from that, but for me, that wasn't the case. But I was always okay, and that's an amazing thing to realize, and to realize that there's this club. And part of that, you know, there is a club that I look at my friends today, they're all in 12-step programs. Not because the other people were losers or weirdos or whatever, but because I can connect with you, not on my strengths, but on my weaknesses. My friends outside the rooms, I can talk, we connect on what we're great at. Here, I connect with you on what I'm horrible at and what I'm scared of and what I need help with. That's a bond that I just self-select. I'm gonna call one of you guys 99 times out of 100 because this is the fellowship. This is the club that I wanna be in. And I learned how to set boundaries here. But for me, and I don't, again, this is not an Al-Anon thing. This is what I learned in this program. Part of my problem coming in is that I thought, as I said, boundaries were, I'm gonna draw a line in the sand and I want you to know if you cross it, then I'm gonna do X and I'm gonna do it. But what I've learned in this program for me to keep myself happy, joyous, and free is the boundaries are, these are the things I am going to do to take care of myself regardless of what you think, regardless of what you would like. Do certain people in my life want me to be here tonight instead of home watching TV? No. But I said I'm coming anyway, and they were great about it. I take care of myself first, and I talk to the people in my life about how do I balance being selfish with my recovery versus making sure I'm taking care of myself. And those boundaries, I never have to say to someone, if you do this, what happens today is people do things that I don't find acceptable, and I just keep doing the thing that I was gonna do anyway, and they react. They are not happy with it, and some of those people are no longer in my life. And I'm okay. I'm okay. They didn't punch me, and if they did punch me, I'd be okay. And they move on, and I now have a better quality of people in my life. The last thing I want to say is I learned I actually remember exactly where I was when I realized this. For me, more than anything else, the gift of Al-Anon is the present. That when I let go of trying to control all of you, and let go of all these stories I've been telling myself about how you are making my life worse, and I let go of worrying about what's going to happen in the future, I can actually be in the present. Never been there before. I'd spent my whole life in the moment. It was just always the wrong moment. I was always with you worrying about the future or regretting the past. And I will say, in my personal relationships, I now see what a horrible, horrible thing that is to do another human being. It probably would have been better if I had just ran off with someone else and not been in the house than to be in the house with her, staring at her as she's sharing something honest and thing. And all I could think is, can we get to the TV show already? Would you please stop talking? Like, that dead eyes, I think, is the cruelest thing in the world, because it's now, I'm now present enough to see when someone does it to me, which is luckily very little, and it just takes me back to how bad I was, how vicious of that is to do to where everyone else thinks you're the greatest guy, but the people close to your life are like, he's not even listening to me. I'm bearing my soul and he doesn't listen to me. So now I can be present. Regardless of what happened today at work, I can be with you today, regardless of what's going to happen when I get home and whatever, but you know, in the future, I can be with you today. And that is, it is such a powerful gift to be here, because that then opens up something that I thought was off the table for me until some other external event happened. I don't know what the event was, which is, despite what other people are doing in my life, despite what other addictions and addicts and resentments are going around my life to me today, I can have fun. I didn't know I was allowed to have fun. I resented the idea when someone said, so what do you do for fun? Did you not hear me just tell you about my life and what's going on and the world that's on my shoulder and all the balls that are in the air and the spinning plates? I got to fun. I can't do fun. I'll go to do something fun that you think is fun so you'll like me, but I'm not going to have fun. And today, because I can be present, I have a lot of fun. I sit with my team at work. We have lunch almost every day, and no matter what's going on, no matter who of us has annoyed each other during the day, we will eat and we will laugh. And I will laugh hard. And I have outside creative interests that used to scare the bejesus out of me. And I can go and I can do it and I can have fun. That's the life I want for myself. I thought I would need to earn a certain amount of money or get to a certain goal weight or have a certain job before I would then be allowed to have fun. I thought I had to be a father before I would be allowed to really enjoy life. There's always this, when I get to this thing, I can enjoy my life. When this other person puts down that substance, I can enjoy my life. The truth is, I just enjoy my life. I just enjoy my life. I love, you know, being here before the meeting. I thought I would spend the whole time just worrying about what am I going to say, what am I going to say, what am I going to say. And so many wonderful people that I care so deeply about came tonight to hear me, and I was able to just be with them in that little moment of nothing, but a moment that I could just share. And I now string together thousands of those moments, you know, hundreds a day, thousands a week. And that's what's making my life just so wonderful. When I'm being of service to my dog now, no matter what has gone on, if I give him a tummy rub, if I rub his tummy, he loses his goddamn mind. He throws himself on the back, his things just go out, his head rolls back and his tongue comes out in this, regardless of what was just happening, this moment of bliss. And I now actually get it. I can look at him and say, brother, I feel ya. I totally know what that's like. And if you're in the room today, if you're new and you didn't want to identify, or if you've just been struggling like so many of us have, I just wanted to say, it is happy, joyous, and free is not something that you obtain as a goal. Surrender and serenity is not something that we strive for. I believe it's something that's in all of us, and we just have to let go of the shit that's on top of it, and we can all have fun whenever we want. And regardless of the other stuff, and I know, again, I don't want to make light of the things that other addicts are doing in your lives, because I know I've heard stories, they're way worse than mine, and some of them involve physical jeopardy or jeopardy of children. I don't want to diminish them, but I promise you, you can have fun. You can enjoy your life starting today. You don't even have to wait till the 12th reason step to have fun. fun. We can have fun today if we let go of the things that we are keeping ourselves, that we are telling ourselves are keeping us from having fun. And if we all have fun, that's a life I wish on everybody. And so I thank you guys for letting me share. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.